of your heart a stone. When Orso woke in a comfortable bed for the first time in months, he wondered for a blissful moment whether it might all have been a dream. The rebellion, the great change, the court of the people, the baying crowds and the prison cells, the figures dropping from the Tower of Chains. Then he saw the sunlight glimmer from between the heavy drapes, the faint glint on the gilded wallpaper, and it came back in a pleasurable rush whose bed he was in. The smile spread across his face, and he stretched, rolled, thinking he might politely offer Ricca the chance to make use of his morning wood, the way she had so enthusiastically made use of the midnight variety. But the bed was empty. Someone had left fresh clothes on a chair, and he slipped from the covers and pulled the trousers on. He crept to the window, nudged the curtains back with a cautious finger to peer across gardens glistening with last night's rain towards the middle way. He caught a glimpse of flags through the budding branches, the crossed hammers of Angland, maybe. He heard the familiar tramp of armoured feet and let the curtains fall. No doubt they were still searching for him. Plainly he was far from free. But with Ricca on his side, he had a chance. In Adua, self-styled zenith of civilization, they liked to think of anything beyond the Circle Sea as primitive. But they could have learned a lot from the Northmen, about courage, about endurance, about loyalty, about the enthusiastic use of wood, for that matter. He found he was smiling again. He had no idea what would happen now, but for the first time in a long time, he was eager to find out. He padded down the stairs into the empty hallway. Far from the first time he had stolen from a lady's bed, but the stakes had rarely been so high. He heard soft voices talking in Northern and slipped across to the open door of the dining room. Ricca sat at the head of a table set for breakfast. Isern Ifail had one hand on the back of her chair, leaning down to mutter in her ear. Orso had the impression he had interrupted a difficult conversation, and more than likely, he had been its subject. By the frown on Isern's face, his way with the ladies did not extend to hill women. But then, since he lost the crown, his way with the ladies probably did not extend very far at all. It was something of a surprise that it still reached Ricca. Looking at her troubled expression now, he wondered whether, in the cold light of morning, it might not fall short of her, too. But Orso's father had insisted the best way to brighten the mood was to act as if it was already incandescent, an approach he had applied to Orso's mother for 30 years with a total lack of success. So Orso plastered on a smile, strutted into the room, and called out, "Morning!" with almost offensive enthusiasm. "Barely," said Isern, as she stalked past him to the door, endlessly chewing. From the short patch of sunlight in front of the windows, it could not have been far short of midday. "My mother would have counted it quite the victory to get me up at this hour." Orso licked his lips as he pulled out a chair. Last night's exertions had left him with an appetite. Well, that, and barely eating for a few days. "Do you mind if I..." "Dig in," said Ricca. He started to fork sausages onto a plate, mouth thoroughly watering. "Is there anything better than a good meal after lean times? There's a few in the north who'd swear by a good revenge after a long feud." He closed his eyes in simple pleasure as he chewed. "Revenge won't fill your belly. You sound like my father. By all accounts, a shrewd man." "He was all heart," said Ricca, nudging some crumbs about her plate. Orso felt that need to lift the mood again. "Have an egg," he said, plucking one from a dish and holding it out. Not much of a gift, especially when it had been hers in the first place. But then the whole North was hers now. She was the one with the power, while he had nothing to recommend him but his winning sense of humour. "You don't look entirely happy," he said. She plucked the egg from his fingers and started tapping it against the edge of the table, gently breaking the shell. "Lots to think about."
Regrets, eh?
She looked up sharply. Looking into the gaping pupil of that long eye still scared him and excited him at once, as though she might see some secret truth in him that he had never guessed at.
Why'd you say that? I've a few of my own. I recognize a fellow sufferer. It can't be easy to know what's coming.
No. She started to pick away the broken shell with her fingernails. I've often argued with Isern over whether it's a blessing or a curse. I swing back and forth.
Don't we all? Just flags tugged wherever the breeze pleases.
Even when it does open, the long eye never gives you all the answers. It's mist and whispers. You have to find your own way to the truth. She looked up at him again, and again he felt that excitement and that fear.
You want the painful truth? A secret I haven't dared tell anyone? Well, as long as it doesn't hurt too much.
She leaned towards him, dropping her voice.
The truth is, I used to see things before my father died, before I stole the North, before I killed Stour and Calder, before I was Black Ricker and I was a girl you gave an egg to.
She waved a hand at her tattooed face.
But since the runes were written, nothing.
She bit into the egg and sat back, speaking around a mouthful.
Reckon my long eyes closed for good. So you pretend? I do what my father tried to. Give his people at least a bit of what they want. Folk like the notion of someone who knows what's coming. That way, they don't have to worry about it.
Orso puffed out his cheeks.
I'd never know you had doubts. You seem so sure of yourself.
He gave a snort of laughter. Perhaps he had a type after all.
You remind me of Savine in a way.
She did not take it altogether as a compliment.
I've changed, that's true. I've had to grow harder. As an expert in disappointing their parents, I'm sure your father would be very proud.
He had meant that to be kind, but she winced as if the words hurt.
I wish I thought so.
I had a vision, just a year or two past, though it feels an age ago. It's all come true, one way or another. She looked out of the windows, their bright squares reflected in her eye.
I saw a wolf eat the sun.
Orso pondered that.
I'm no magus, learned in the interpretation of visions, but I'd say that was Stour Nightfall making war on the Union.
I saw a lion eat the wolf. He sat back, rather enjoying the game.
The young lion beating the great wolf in the circle.
I saw a lamb eat the lion. Orso could not help but grin.
That was me, giving Brock a richly deserved kick up the arse at Stoffenbeck.
I saw an owl eat the lamb. Orso's grin faded. Who's the owl?
No idea.
Now she looked at him, and with the strangest, saddest expression.
Till now.
He was starting to feel worried.
What is it? I'm the owl, she said.
The doors of the dining room swung open. Cole Shivers was the first in, metal eye glinting. Next came those two Anglanders Orso had often seen on the front benches of the Court of the People, the big one and the lean one, Glaward and Durand. The final guest was announced before his appearance by the squeaking of the bearings in his artificial leg, accompanied by that familiar sinking sensation of dashed hopes.
Leo Dan Brock.
Orso forked up another piece of sausage, but it seemed to have lost all its taste.
Do you never tire of killing my mood?
Brock looked even more gaunt, pale, and furious than the last time Orso saw him, the day the Lord's Round burned, and he stabbed Lord Marshal Forrest in the chest. All those high qualities everyone had once so envied, the honesty, the bravery, the blunt good nature, seemed to have been crushed out of him like the pulp out of a lemon, leaving just the bitter seeds of pride, anger, and an insatiable need to conquer. That, and a truly unforgivable lack of any sense of humour. "You've led me quite a dance the last couple of weeks," he growled, as if Orso's desperate attempts to stay alive were a personal affront. "Hardly my fault that you have such poor footwork," said Orso. Leaning back against the doorway, Iserni Fail managed a titter. Perhaps unsurprisingly, no one else was in the mood. Orso glanced about the room, wondering if it would have been the done thing to try to make a break for it, but he very much doubted he could fight off Call Shivers with a fork. Ricker spoke slowly, softly, as if she was trying to convince herself. "The North has been through the fire, Orso. I put it through the fire. If it was just about me..." She grimaced, then snapped the words angrily. "But I've all those people to think about now. They need peace." "And I'm the price, I suppose." Orso glanced from Glarwood to Brock to Durin to Isern to Shivers and back to Ricker. "You promised to fight with him against me. Then you broke your word. I'm what it costs you to get back in his good graces. If he even has any these days." "Constant pain can wear down your patience," said Brock. "In Adua, we like to think of anything beyond the Circle Sea as primitive." Orso gave a sigh and placed his knife and fork neatly together with a final sounding clink. He was finished, and not just with breakfast. "But it turns out you Northmen can teach us a thing or two about treachery." Isern might have given the tiniest careless shrug. Shivers did not move even that much. Ricker had at least the good grace to wince. "A leader needs to be hard," she said, frowning down at the table. "So others needn't be. She must make of her heart a stone." "Or get rid of it altogether," said Brock. "Finally, we agree." Iserni Fail scratched at the hollow above her collarbone and winked. "Ruthlessness is a quality much loved of the moon." Orso was tempted to scream and rage, but it would have ruined an otherwise charming morning. He had acted for so many years, in the full and glaring view of the public, with an utter lack of dignity. Now, in private, he insisted on keeping hold of every shred. He slid his chair back, stood, and gave Ricker his best formal bow. "Please allow me to say that I do not blame you for this in the least. Terrible manners to just drop in. Entirely my own fault. I'm actually..." He gave a disbelieving grin as he realized it was true. "I'm actually rather glad we had this time together." Ricker winced again, even harder, as Glarwood walked over with a set of heavy manacles. "Believe it or not, so am I." "An unlikely romance, this," sneered Brock, pale lip curled with evident disgust. Or was it jealousy? Ricker's glance towards him was satisfyingly furious. "We're even," she forced through gritted teeth. Brock's nostrils flared. The young lion might have had fewer limbs than in his glory days, but he yet possessed a full set of heroic nostrils. "Take him somewhere he won't bloody escape from," he snapped at Durin, "and the Lady Regent won't find out about. Not until it's time." He looked back to Ricker. "We're even, but we'll be keeping our swords well sharpened just in case."
"The Master Maker forged mine," said Call Shivers in that broken whisper of his. "It never gets blunt."
He made no effort to be threatening. The one advantage of a giant scar and a metal eye, perhaps, is that being threatening takes no effort whatsoever.
"Ha!"
And Brock's mechanical legs squeaked faintly as he limped for the door. The bracelet snapped shut around Orso's wrists. One could almost hear the discomfort in Glarwood's voice.
"Hope that's not too tight, you—"
"No, no," said Orso. "Most comfortable fetters I've worn, and I've tried on quite a few lately."
He took one last look at Ricker, sitting there in the sunlight at the head of the table. He would have liked more time with her, but he supposed it had never been very realistic. Peace between the North and the Union. He gave a little chuckle. Honestly, it's a far better legacy than anyone expected from me. And he strolled jauntily out into the hall. Well, as jauntily as you can in chains, which isn't very.